Welcome to our third software quality podcast, a change agent profile of self-taught developer Dominique de Guzman, cloud services engineer at Twilio. I'm Jan Stafford, executive editor of Search Software Quality and TechTarget's application development sites. I'll be talking today with Dominique, or as she's best known, Dom, about her career and her development and community services work. At Twilio, Dom focuses on development pipeline, infrastructure monitoring, and internal communications tools. Alongside development, she is one of the founding members of the Diversity and Inclusion Initiative at Twilio, as well as the San Francisco City Director for Lesbians Who Tech. Thanks for joining us, Dom.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be on here.
So let's talk about what you do at Twilio. What do you do, and what's your work day look like?
Sure. So I'm a cloud services engineer. At other companies, it's probably called system engineer or infrastructure engineer, all synonymous. DevOps. And what I focus on, like you had mentioned, is infrastructure monitoring, which would include making sure all of our servers are working and also that they are all reporting correctly. And that also includes a lot of our metrics. And then alongside that, I do a lot of development tools and development pipelines. And so not only monitoring the infrastructure, but also helping us develop that infrastructure, whether it's tools as internal communication, like using Jira or other Atlassian tools, or something a little bit more like having and helping maintain the Jenkins build.
So just as an overview, which technologies, tools, and processes do you work with every day or most days?
So mainly for myself, I know it's not a very popular one, but I actually prefer coding a lot in Bash. I'm just scripting a lot in Bash. I also use Python and Ruby. And here I've used in the past Puppet and Chef and a couple of other variations of distributed infrastructure systems. But right now those are the main tools that I'd be using.
And what do you like about them? Why do you want to use those over others?
I think it's just the simplified use of how to do something. A lot of the times I find myself trying to over-engineer something, and it's just because I got really interested in it. But really, a lot of the things that need to be scripted can be done either in Python, Ruby, or a simple Bash script. And really, for my title position, what needs to be focused on is if it's not really broken, then we don't really need to reinvent the wheel.
So what have you learned about working with Ruby that would be helpful for other developers to know?
White spaces are always what bite me in that one. But right now, I think for those who are learning, syntax highlighting is incredible. Using something like a simple text editor is fine, but using a little bit more like using Sublime or using TextMate also has some highlighting would really help. But really, with working with Ruby, the more or less what I would be doing are just simple statements and also helping with provisioning Chef and converting roles.
And what's on your wish list for features or capability for Ruby or some other tool that you use every day?
It's hard to say a wish list right now. I wish that there was I think that the tools that are on my wish list, they already exist. It's just that I haven't gotten a chance to explore them. And so if we were to build off of something like syntax highlighting to make it easier for people to understand what they're doing, maybe not necessarily for those who are more veteran, but those who are trying to get into software engineering or development operations. I think another thing would be kind of a syntax checker and something to run through and see when or where something would fail. I know that there are a couple of tools out there that do it right now. I haven't been able to use one fully successfully, but pretty open to exploring those out.
And what would be on your wish list about the processes that you use or Twilio uses? What would you see that you'd like to tweak or change in some way?
I think that there's always something that we can tweak and change. I think right now the biggest focus is that There's a sticker I think I got from a conference once that said system administrators always code like the person maintaining the code is a madman. And I always loved that because a lot of the times, maybe not so much here, but in my other positions before, somebody would throw us a script or throw us a role or throw us a new service and expect us to completely maintain it without actually doing a proper handoff or even an introduction or have it be scoped or planned in a sprint. And a lot of the times it's just not fair. Being thrown something in a language you may not even know or being thrown something in a service that you may not have a lot of actual hands-on experience with. And I think a big thing there is to do a proper handoff, to understand that the people who are taking over and maintaining that particular service will understand it.
So if you had your druthers, what kind of development projects would you be working on all the time, or what do you like doing the most and why?
What do I like doing the most? I think I have a system administrator background, and like a true system administrator, automating everything. So things that if I'm going to have to do something every week and I know it's a manual process, I'm going to script it and I'm going to make it pretty much as automated as I can within reason of some interaction. But I think that's kind of one of my favorite parts of it. And a lot of what I like doing also is that while we maintain the infrastructure, our infrastructure is always a part. Infrastructure is infrastructure. Infrastructure is a part of every other team's environment, and every other team is dependent on it. And so you get to interact with a bunch of other teams and see what other teams and people are working on and how the things that I'm working on directly connect to all of those projects and all of those services.
I'm wondering, you know, what approaches you might use. I mean, Agile's an approach, obviously, but you might have some others that you use to foster teamwork and in application development projects.
Sure, yeah. Agile is absolutely definitely my favorite way to work. I like Kanban as well. But I think those are the two that I've actually had full-on experiences with. And the other one just being more Kanban related, just ticketing service come in as they come in and work on them as a team. But I think working as a team to pick which type of strategies to use is best. Since a lot of team and the way that their development works may not actually fit into an Agile sprint planning style, but may actually work better. And a lot of the times I think that a big part of that is whether or not your team is dealing with more bugs than it is with bugs and feature requests versus an actual continuous deployment.
Good, good. I see a lot of customization being done with Agile and other related processes. As I talk to various teams, it seems like everybody sort of rolls out their own flavor of it to fit their needs. And
yeah, that's absolutely true. I think there have been many times where I've been a part of an Agile training, whether it's led or sponsored by the company or sponsored by the community or just kind of my own research. And while there is an Agile manifesto, I think every team puts their own flavor on it. I know that there is a, for lack of a better term, like a backbone of Agile development. And I like working where there's a little bit of wiggle room in that Agile backbone. And the only reason I say that is because there are a lot of unknowns, and scoping for those type of unknowns when you're sprint planning for Agile development is really hard. I think that's just a per team basis, but I do have favorites.
So which new and shiny upcoming technologies are you excited about?
Oh, there's a few. Mainly, what the new and shiny technologies that I get excited about are hardware related versus software related, and that's just because I came from a hardware background. And so, I'm really curious to see all of these different wearables that are coming out now, and not necessarily to purchase all of them, more along the lines of the differences in development and the differences in what they have to offer. I think that wearables are kind of a new thing that people are either incredibly excited about or incredibly hesitant about, and there's barely any in between that. And so it's kind of interesting to watch, at least the social aspect of all these wearables. And the second thing is love packing together some things. And so working with Raspberry Pi and Arduino, I think that those are the new, I think the new Raspberry Pi came out recently. I can't remember, but it was, I'm pretty excited to play with those. I wish I can get some time to start tinkering with them.
So with the fun new technologies would be one thing that would attract you to software development, but what attracted you to it in the first place?
From Linux System Administration, it was kind of an easy transition into software development. I think the biggest differences were continuous deployment and also versus only working on bugs, I got to do more feature requests. I got to do more development, and I think it was a great move.
So for you, was it a matter of learning on your own as opposed to like going through a bunch of certification trainings and that kind of thing? It seems like you took a more informal kind of approach.
Yeah, I did take an informal approach. Not to say that I didn't try to do a little bit more formal, whether it was a certificate or just a little bit more. I think I even tried to apply to a couple of boot camps at the time before I started development. Mm-hmm. And the main reason I didn't go more formalized was because I didn't have the time resources to dedicate. I was still working full-time supporting Linux machines, and then I think I had I was doing some volunteer work on the side for another organization. And so my time was a little limited to when I could pick things up. So I started very early with picking up a Linux administration book and then creating my own Linux machines at home, creating a Linux service at home, and then I moved into I researched free coding classes online, and I would do one course and then do another one, go back to the first one, redo it, and do that, repeat that pattern over and over again, because everybody teaches a little differently. And so if you do a 12-week boot camp on just Python with one person, I can guarantee if you do a different 3-week course for Python with a different person, that you're going to learn something new. And that's what I wanted to integrate. And I think the biggest thing for me when I was doing that was when you do Code Academy or you do Skillshare or you do any of the free coding classes online, they give you certain types of problems, which are generally algorithm problems or somewhat of the same. And when you're put into the software development field, the reason that I kept going back and forth and redoing classes that I'd already taken was because I had putting the puzzle pieces together of the type of algorithms that were presented in all of the free coding classes and then trying to make it applicable for software development as a profession was very interesting. There were some times where I would have to ask for help, and when somebody answered the question, I had known that answer. I just didn't know that was supposed to be the answer. That was supposed to be, that would work in that particular way. And so when I kept going back and forth and redoing classes that I'd already done, a lot of it would make sense. And a lot of it helped me in being a little bit more self-sufficient. So I think if anybody is learning and wants to learn out there by themselves, just because you completed a course one time does not mean that you're a master of that language or that course.
Now, you work with a number of organizations that stimulate application development education and diversity in IT, for instance, STEM and Lesbians in Tech. What mm-hmm. spurred you to get involved in that way?
Actually, Les, I owe a whole bunch to Lesbians in Tech. When I was at a previous position, I was the only female on a team, and I had been the only female or self-identified female on a team for a very long time. And I would try to find a sense of community, and it was just me and a bunch of straight men, and which was fine. They were great guys to work with, but I didn't find anybody that I felt had a part of myself with in their personalities. And so I started to look out, and I looked at Startout, which is an LGBT tech organization, but I started to realize that it was heavily men, and I was looking for a female mentor. and I found Leanne Pittsford, who started Less Fancy Tech, and I went to the first summit in February of 2014. Left incredibly inspired, and I've been incredibly involved with them ever since. So I've spoken at their Less Fancy Tech New York Summit, San Francisco Summit, and I've participated in at least 12 different speaking events that they have helped me out with, and also the White House Summit in D.C. last year in June.
What do you have you gained or benefited from doing this kind of community work?
Oh, yeah. I think that I've definitely benefited, and I think the benefit is goes both ways. People always, or not always, but people come up to me, and they'll say that they have seen my talk or they have seen me on panel and what it meant to them, and I never expected that ever. I go on a panel and I talk because when I used to be in the audience in those panels, I remember how influential that was for me. And I think that one of the biggest things in the is that I was interviewed for Fortune magazine for what it's like to be a lesbian in tech with a bunch of other lesbians that are in my network. And a couple of days later, after the article was released, I got an email from somebody who was in Middle America and who said that she was thankful for that article because she didn't know a single other lesbian in tech, and she was just in the Midwest and didn't know how to deal with people asking her where her boyfriend was. And I had mentioned that to a couple of other people, and we actually tried to get her a network of either women or queer women in her area so she would feel less alone. And I think even small moves, just small emails like that, remind me every day why I'm very public and open about being queer, and also about pushing people into STEM-related fields. I think also that it shows a lot when you are at a hackathon or you're at an event and you're helping a group of kids who may not have these type of opportunities growing up, or even may not even have a computer at home, and you're sitting there helping them figure out what they can do by programming something together, and the amount of excitement and pride on their face when they're accomplished is pretty rewarding. And I know that it makes a difference.
Absolutely. You also work at Twilio in their diversity group, right?
Yes. I helped co-found that with another colleague.
And what sort of results have you gotten there?
It's incredibly supportive here. It was, we had a slow start. It started off as an email that we would go back and forth kind of chatting about when all these other tech companies, the larger ones, were releasing technical statistics. We started looking internally, and we turned emails into a roundtable discussion, and what I thought would bring six people got over 20 people. And in a small company like Twilio, that speaks volumes. And we have now been recognized by the entire company as a full-fledged initiative and organization, and we have split into two focuses. My colleague focuses on internal things, like making sure we have an inclusive culture, making sure that everybody feels open and welcome here. She focuses on also attrition rates and our internal statistics. And I focus more on outreach and recruiting. So I'll kind of tag along with a lot of the recruiting events and also do a lot of the speaking and panel events, speaking along with the Dev Angels on our team, and all of those spaces to make sure that we're in the right spaces, that we're in places that don't only focus on a specific group of people. Our marketing team has been great about that, and I've been incredibly thankful that they support me and also going to other events as well.
So what's your advice to other developers, engineers who might want to get involved in some sort of community service related to IT that calls out to them? Everybody's working long hours and everything, and you know, how do they fit it in, and you know, why should they be doing that?
I always hear this joke when I go with a lot of the diversity initiatives and inclusion groups. So there's a bunch of roundtables that I attend, and you would always see everybody sitting at the round table, and they'll say what their name is and their title. And you look around the room, and about 75% of those people are in that room because it's their passion project. And it's not necessarily a joke, but it's just something that you look around the room and you kind of laugh that all of these people are here because it's important to them. It's not a job that they're, it's not a title that they have, and it's, although some people do have the title, it's not about that. It was that they noticed the problem and they wanted to make a change about it. So if anybody actually does want to make that change or wants to start a group or wants to start some sort of inclusive culture, whether it's an employee resource group or even just a way to have an open door policy with HR, I think the biggest piece of advice is to not take on too much too quickly. We learned that very early on. And one of the things is because when you get the amount of support that you didn't expect, you get really excited and you really want to do all of the changes, all the things that you can do. For example, when we looked into being HRC certified, unfortunately we weren't at the company size that HRC requires, but we got so excited we tried to make all of the changes at once, which just could not happen. And the reason it couldn't happen is because we couldn't abandon our primary positions in order to make all these changes. And so what we did is treat those type of changes like continuous deployment. If you're coming from an engineering background or some sort of technical background, break everything down as if you're breaking them down into quarters and into sprints. And it helps having an overarching goal. So it helps. It also helps with management to see the progression of what you're doing. And that's really what counts, right? The end result counts so much, but a lot of times, a lot of people want to see where you're at in that progression. And I think that and also understanding that it's okay to fail sometimes. And the reason that I say it's okay to fail is because it's a learning process. If you're going to be starting something, it's going to be something that you're starting and doing a lot of research and doing as much as you can to find a network of people can only do so much. Things might happen where you didn't expect them to happen that way. And the best thing is how you recover from it. It's just learning from your mistakes in that way, just like you would with programming, just like you would with anything else that you're learning. The only difference is that you as the person are incredibly invested, and so you tend to be a little hard on yourself if things don't work out the way you want to right off the bat. But it's okay.
Dawn, that's great advice. I've really enjoyed talking with you today, and I appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And thanks to all of you who are listening to this Search Software Quality podcast, a conversation with Dominique de Guzman, Cloud Services Engineer at Twilio. I'm Jan Stafford, Executive Editor of Search Software Quality and TechTarget's application development site, and I'm signing off. Thank you.